Nature and humanity conspiring to ruin his face. To his horror, the man grabbed him firmly by the wrist. The boy tried to pull away, but the grip was surprisingly strong, and he could not break free. The ghastly creature drew the boy nearer, then peeled his lips apart in a dreadful rictus, revealing a mouthful of brown, broken stumps. A fetid smell of rotted cabbage and putrid flesh wafted out of his mouth and made the boy gag.
"Spare a coin, young sir," he said. "Just a sesterces for one of Sulis's veterans."
Spittle showered the boy as the man spoke, words lisping and whistling through broken teeth. He became acutely conscious of his purple-bordered white toga pretexta, the toga he had to wear until he was old enough for the plain white toga virilis of a man. The carts and pack animals that congested the filthy streets had already splashed the clean wool with mud and manure, and now he thought it was about to be contaminated further by the miasma emanating from this demon. His mother would kill him. A deep laugh came from behind him.
"Oi, mate, take your mucky hands off him. Don't you know you're molesting?"
The man flinched, and the boy snatched his arm back, rubbing his wrist where the fingers had dug in deep enough to bruise.
"Your pardon, fine, sir. I'm just an old man, crippled for the honour of Rome, looking for a coin to stop from starving."
"This," continued the young man who had spoken, "is the son of Marcus Antonius Creticus, hero of Crete, conqueror of the pirates. This is Marcus Antonius. Remember the name."
The young boy flushed, looking down at his feet. He was being mocked. His father had been given an extraordinary command of the navy to defeat the pirates that were plaguing the Mediterranean, but had been singularly unsuccessful, not to mention outright corrupt, plundering the provinces he was supposed to be protecting. The most recent news Rome had received was of a disgraceful defeat at the hands of the pirates and Cretans, and with most of the fleet sunk, Antony's father had only been able to escape with his life by brokering a humiliating peace treaty. The harsh-tongued Romans had promptly dubbed him Creticus, the type of title usually given to a triumphant general, but in this case, clearly ironic. Not least because, as well as conqueror of Crete, the words also meant man of chalk.
"Clodius, leave him alone!"
"What's up, Curio? Worried your little toy boy might cry?"
Antony's other companion, Gaius Scribonius Curio, 2 years older and on the cusp of manhood, was much shorter than Clodius, unsurprising since Clodius had 10 years seniority on him. But he stepped up to him and gave him a hard punch in the upper arm. Clodius laughed and clipped Curio round the side of the head, sending him into a rage, flying forward, fists whirling furiously. Clodius, chuckling, held him at arm's length until the storm blew itself out. Curio stood, chest heaving, blowing heavily, face stony.
"Apologize, Clodius, to me and him."
Clodius regarded him, eyes twinkling, then bowed low to them both.
"My apologies, masters Antonius and Curio, for my low humor."
It was the best they would get, Antony knew, and following Curio's lead, he nodded acceptance.
"And as for you," Clodius said, rounding on the beggar who had been watching the exchange in bemusement, "I'll teach you to lay hands on a boy of senatorial rank, you scum!"
He shoved the crippled veteran hard in the chest, sending him toppling over backward, his crutch flying, arms windmilling in a vain attempt to keep balance. He landed flat on his back in a pile of donkey manure, which at least cushioned his fall. Curio and Antony laughed, as young boys always will, at the sight of the two funniest things in life, falling over and shit. Clodius stepped up to the beggar.